Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Fanon. Please check the link tree in the description and see all of our beautiful, lovely, salacious links to listen to more. Thank you.
So welcome back to Spoiler Talk. We're going to start with a good old favorite moment from Kai, since we didn't get to say it in the first half.
Yes. Okay. So this is one of the moments that I think that the book did way better in terms of the emotional weight of the scene than the movie did. And this is the death of Jamis, like after Paul's knife fight with him.
I really like that scene.
And
I agree.
It just felt very like, you know, there's a line where it's like, okay, like you have to say you're the friend of Jamis. So he's like, okay, I'm the friend of Jamis. And then like, you know, plays him a song on the Balisette and somebody sings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very emotional moment. And it's told in a way where I think Frank Herbert's more like simple style works with it, because
like
it really lets the
writing.
What did you say?
It's the gold star scene to show off the best parts of his writing.
Yes, for sure. Because it breathes enough, and the language carries you through like the dialogue and the song and whatnot. And I just felt like it also was very heartfelt. Like you feel like even though they had just been fighting each other and whatnot, it still feels like this death meant something to Paul.
Yes.
There's also another thing I want to add on, because it's tied to it, that bothered me that didn't happen in the movie, that I was really surprised about. If I remember correctly, before they duel, they remove their still suits because the winner gets to have their water.
Yes.
And it bothered me that they didn't do that, but I also understand them not wanting to fight in the buff.
Yes.
In the movie, I think it was just a lot more like, we gotta go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. The Jamis encounter in the movie was very like happenstance in a way.
It's also, it's crazy that they kind of skim over Paul like crying because he kills Jamis.
Yeah,
important part. They're like, oh my God, he's wasting water on the dead. Why would he do that?
He's giving water to the dead.
Yeah.
Giving
water to the dead. I personally think that, I feel like the Jamis scene specifically were the reason that I went from, oh, this is a great movie too. Man, I wish this was an extended cut. I want to see more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that could have been explored there.
Oh, for sure.
I agree, though. Good choice, Kai. That was going to be one of my other favorite choices.
Yeah, what about you, Doodle Bob? What's your least favorite scene?
So my least favorite scene, and it's why I don't like the sister of Paul, is the death of the Baron Harkonnen. That was the most comedic death I've ever seen in a book. And it doesn't hit as hard. Like, I like the movie because
the movie
it fixed that issue
so
for me.
Much better.
It fixed, like, when I say the movie fixed all of my problems with the book, I mean it. That single scene made me literally, like, want to drop my headphones off, pace around the office, and go, what the fuck, Frank Herbert? That was...
You know what's funny?
It was such, like, it made me so mad because it undercut what should have been a triumphant moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, yep, here's just some little girl stabbing the Baron with the Gam Jabbar. It's like, no.
Okay.
No, but I don't want that.
What's funny is that what I wanted to bring up is that scene has my favorite line in the entire book.
Really?
Because there is a full-on argument and like fight between the Baron and Aaliyah that goes on in front of the Emperor, and the Emperor's only line in the entire scene is, "All of you are insane." Which humanizes the Emperor in probably the best way of any character in the book. The Emperor's perspective, he doesn't know about any of this terrible purpose fucking religious bullshit. He's just there, this fully prescient 4-year-old with the mind of thousands of adult women.
2-year-old.
I thought she was 4 at that point.
She's a genuine ass toddler.
I thought there was 2 times. 4-year-old's still a toddler, first of all.
I know. I'm saying that she was just
a
toddler. That's how
even
I remember.
Crazier is she's 2, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure she's
I thought she was 4 as well, but
maybe she's 4. I thought she was 2.
It's hard. But
could be wrong.
There was a time
skip. No older than four.
There was two time skips.
But I specifically remember, like, that scene was the moment that I was like, because I had, like, I wouldn't say the book hooked me, but there were times when it grabbed my attention. That was the first time I slapped away its hand. Like, I said, no, bad book. No, bad.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
I just love how it humanizes Shaddam, because he's just like, what fuck is going on?
No, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. I just like the movie and how it handled the death of the Baron felt more resonant emotionally and triumphantly for House Atreides than the book. And I'm glad that they removed the time skips. They made it just like a sound story from beginning to end. It does rush a little bit of the pacing in terms of, like, you know, organizing things, but, like, I don't fucking care. It got rid of my least favorite moment. It's a sacrifice I'm willing to take.
So according to Goodreads, she's 2 or 3 at the end of Dune. She's like, she's
17 by the end, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to say that both the 1984 movie and the oft-forgotten sci-fi miniseries, which I actually hear is really good.
Did you know it was James McAvoy as
Leto the Second? They also try to adapt Alia, and let me tell you, it's goofy. And I don't think there was any way that you could have made that not goofy. But anybody who goes like, yeah, after the first book Dune starts getting weird, did you forget about the psychic toddler? Did you?
They forgot.
Everybody's like, the guy becomes the worst. There's a child with the mind of an adult in this book.
Yeah, it pissed me off so much. I would not say like it unlocked new levels of rage in me that I didn't know I had, but it was one of the few instances. It was one of the few instances where if I had the physical book, I would have thrown it across the room in anger.
I have a really funny perspective on this that I'm going to share very shortly.
I thought it rocked. I don't know.
I think for the reasons that you say it's a horrible scene, I'm imagining the Baron saying all of that. As I was reading that scene, he's like, you're fucking kidding me! I got killed by a fucking 2-year-old!
No, the idea of the Baron having this fucking meltdown, he's like, this fucking weird fucked up child is here and is telling me things about my lineage that I didn't even know about! And then the Emperor's like, dude, I don't even know what's going on! Like, it's so funny. This is what I mean when I say, dude, I don't know if it's intended to be funny, but it's really funny.
I agree. It is not satisfying on the whole. I think I kind of prefer the movie, but the embarrassing fucking awful way he dies in the book is so befitting of the Baron. Like, the way he dies in the movie, I think, is also very fitting.
It's way cooler as a narrative point, but I think the Baron having the most anticlimactic, stupid ass death rocks.
Well, I will say he's like so much more pathetic in the books, so it does make sense.
So much more pathetic. He's like, I'm dying to eat more. I do, because like you know, I think the movie does a very interesting, because in my mind going to Dune Part 2, I'm like, Paul is gonna have this epic moment where he slays the Baron, and it's gonna be great. It's gonna feel good, but you don't feel good watching. It's horrifying, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it kind of shows like Paul's like fall, like he's like, you know, he says, hello, grandfather, you're going to die like an animal. And like, I almost felt sorry for the Baron because like, obviously, like he's like in this like completely defenseless state, like dying on the stairs as his life support has been cut. And Paul just butchers him like an animal.
See, I didn't feel bad for him at all because he brutally snaps a girl's neck for 5 minutes.
Dude, that scene fucking freaked me out. Oh my god.
So, to me, in the movie, Baron Harkonnen dying like a worm, fruitlessly trying to ascend to the throne as his unknown grandson stabs him in the jugular. Very fitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is fitting, and I'm not saying, like, I felt bad for the guy. It's just, like, I didn't feel good about it.
I think
the vibe that it had. It wasn't like a heroic, like, slaying of a monster. It was, as I mentioned, putting down a cow.
I think that's, but I do think it works in the sense that, like, the Baron sort of was an animal. He didn't treat other people like people. Mm-hmm. He treated them like, you know, like objects, like things. So putting him down like an animal, just it
works.
It's more befitting of a death to me. I felt satisfied.
Absolutely agreed. But absolutely. I still love the original death because it's really funny. Death by
toddler stab.
I think the fact that he is stuck floating in the air is maybe the funniest part of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because his body's just hanging there limply with like drool coming out of his mouth.
Also, I mentioned this a little bit in the spoiler free section, but I want to bring up Dr. Yui's attempt on the Baron's life and how funny it is that after everything he did and how he ruined like the family that he swore his allegiance to, he ruined them like almost forever. And then he just fucks it up.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, it's okay. Obviously, we should kill him with the poison breath attack. Like, he's a fucking dragonborn. And then just didn't, for not even a single second, didn't even think about, like, oh, what if he, like, brought a shield?
I think it's, the way that I see it, and it's the funniest way possible, is in the book, is Leto, like, this is a massive table. Leto's at one end, and the Baron's at the other end, and Leto's just like, ah, fuck it, I'm gonna die anyway. So he just bites it and kills, like, and, like, the gas comes out, and the Baron's just, like, you know, midway chewing his turkey. He sees the gas coming, well, he's like,
well, the Baron goes up to
it eventually.
Yeah, the Baron's close up to him.
Oh, I know, it's just, the way that I view it is way funnier in the sense that, like, they're on completely different ends of the table. And the gas is coming, and the Baron's just like, oh, one more turkey leg will do. And then after he starts hearing Piter's like start dying, he's just like, oh, fine, I'll go.
He's like, oh, I gotta get out of here, man.
Yeah. But yeah, it's funny. It was
quite funny.
It's weird. But we did have some other conversation topics that Matt brought up.
Does
specifically
anybody have anything else besides the three that I was going to bring up? Because one of them is a burning one that I need to bring up to fulfill a promise with Jacob and Kai.
A prophecy?
A conversation that I'm going to hate.
Me too.
I remember.
I'm going to keep it very simple.
I'm going to abstain from the conversation.
I'm going to be agreeable. That's all right. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm not sure which question you're discussing.
The fantasy and sci-fi one.
Okay, because I might actually put some dukes up. I might fight this a little bit because I have my own perspective.
I was so mad about this conversation.
Right. Well, I'm going to keep it very, very agreeable, so let's not throw hands about it. You don't have to abstain, Kai. I had, before the book, here's the preface, I had always been under the impression that Dune had a lot of fantasy elements to it.
Back.
And that there was a... Hey, Sergio. So you're just in time for the fantasy versus sci-fi genre discussion on Dune.
Okay.
Before I read the book, I was under the impression that a pretty dramatic amount of Dune was fantasy, particularly because things like fantasy were inspired by it. I'm of the opinion that Star Wars is just a fantasy story with sci-fi paint all over it.
I can agree
After
that.
Reading Dune, it's definitely not a it's definitely not a fantasy story with sci-fi paint all over it. There's a lot of very important sci-fi elements to the story, far more so than you might first expect when you open up the book and you have a duke and a prince in a castle being read to by his mom, and there's priestess women, and there's magic shit, and there's magic boxes of pain. Like, it opens up, and if you don't read the rest of the book, you think that that's very fantasy oriented. Mm-hmm. But after reading the book, I would say primary is sci-fi, but in accordance with a terrible purpose. I feel like it has a chosen one plot line that it didn't expect to have. Like, the Bene Gesserit have concocted the whole Kwisatz Haderach plot. That's all their own doing. Kwisatz Haderach is powerful, and he is incredibly able, but everything to do with the Fremen plot, with the chosen one stuff, that's completely made up by them. But I feel like the story is like what you've created is out of your control now, because Paul is the chosen one, whether they want him to be or not. And that, I think, was a very heavy fantasy element throughout it.
I think what I think, I agree to that, I think, in to an extent, but a big part of the destiny and the prophecy and everything, like, it's not like the prophecy happens, but not because it was a prophecy, but because a political body influenced the politics of the galaxy for 10,000 years.
Yes, but I think it's ironic then that the prophecy, which they're just using it for convenience's sake with the Fremen, like they have no intention of actually fulfilling the prophecy exactly as it's written. It's just sort of there to control the population. It happens, and it happens in ways that they can't control it anymore.
Yeah,
so he is sort of. Anyways, I'll stop talking there about that.
The correct genre that I would put it under is not it would be sci-fi. I would say that this is considerably sci-fi.
Yes.
However, I believe that the proper genre term that I would use for it is space opera, because it is focusing on it. It is a focus on less about, because it does have a very big focus on the technology, like the still suits and all that stuff. But that a lot of it is also not focused on it. Like they're the still suits are a part of it, and the technology is a part of it, but the focus is not about the technology. It's not about the speculative future. It is specifically about the characters and the melodrama and war and everything that is related to it. I feel like it does have fantasy elements to it, but if I were to define it as a proper genre, I think it does fall under space opera, and Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, would agree with me on that.
Personally, I wouldn't say that it's fantasy. I would say it's strictly sci-fi for a few reasons. I mean, obviously with the world that he built, because obviously this is kind of like a low-tech sci-fi universe where we've kind of reverted to a medieval state. I don't really think having those medieval elements necessarily makes this fantasy, but at the end of the day, sci-fi as a genre is meant to critique and satirize our real world, and usually has some kind of like word of warning. I feel like that's kind of like, you know, Dune's like, that's what Dune does best. Dune is, as Frank put it, a critique on the superhero or the superman, not the guy, but like the idea of like. A super person, like he's so good and he's like really good at things. It's like, don't put your faith into these like super people, because they can lead you astray and you stop thinking for yourself, which is kind of a theme in Dune, because obviously there was the thinking machines and people stopped thinking for themselves because they let the machines do all the thinking, and then, you know, they cast them away, and then that ends up happening to the Fremen. As they get caught up in the jihad and they just place all of their faith in Paul and go on to commit horrible things in his name.
That's one thing I really like about the book, is that the book is very straight up. Like at the end, Paul is like I lost a friend in Stilgar and I gained a follower. He's no longer my friend. He is just another follower of the Lysan Al Gaib.
When I say like it has fantasy elements, I don't strictly mean like medieval like names, like titles and stuff.
No, I
mean is like, this isn't like taking place on Mars. This isn't taking place on Earth. The fantastical elements are not on this. It is specifically, this is taking place in a fictional world, in a fictional universe, with, you know, fantastical versions of things that we are familiar with.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call that fantasy. I would just call that fiction.
But to me, fiction specifically, it usually takes place in, like, I guess the realistic fiction would be like, you know, it takes place on Earth or whatever. But to me, it's like when I include fantasy, it's like, what do you mean by the fact that there are giant space worms in the sands?
They eat
like
the worm poo poo to get high.
It's a very small amount of fantasy, but it's enough to be there to push it into space opera.
I wouldn't call different animals a fantasy element, even if they're not like real animals that we have on Earth, simply because on another planet, other life forms are going to evolve, and they may not necessarily have the same factors influencing them as we've seen on Earth. So that means they could develop in a completely different way than ours. Like, I think a lot of the elements that, like, people have identified as more of the fantastical, so like the spice or the worms or anything like that, that could happen on also, an alien planet simply because it's not our planet, you know? And I would say it's more of like, it's more speculative than that like fantastical.
I would like to bring up something, by the way. Something that you said, Matt, you said that the Bene Gesserit weren't planning on fulfilling the prophecy with the Fremen. Technically, not true.
Technically not true.
It is because they were absolutely planning on fulfilling the prophecy.
They were planning
it's just that the reason because the Kwisatz Haderach was supposed to be the next generation. The whole idea of the reason that they were upset with Jessica is that Paul was supposed to be a woman and was supposed to marry Fade Ralpha.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the prophecy is specific to the Fremen on Dune. And that's not, like, the Bene Gesserit don't give a fuck specifically about the Fremen Dune people. Like, they've influenced them a lot, and they've manipulated them a lot. But, like, the Bene Gesserit are not a Dune-oriented cult. They are a power over the galaxy-oriented cult.
Yeah, but spice is what helps them control the galaxy. So if the Kwisatz Haderach can go in and fulfill the prophecy for them, then they will control the spice, and that's what would make them so powerful. But because is the Kwisatz Haderach, and instead of the Bene Gesserit controlling the spice, he controls the spice. Because the whole prophecy was a ploy to get the Bene Gesserit in power. That was what they were spending 10,000 years doing eugenics for. And then Jessica fucked it up for everybody.
Yes. Yes, she absolutely did. My point being, the Kwisatz Haderach does not, like, the core Bene Gesserit teachings are not specifically about doing shit with the worms on Dune. Like, they've been telling the Fremen. Like, if you told a Fremen what the Bene Gesserit actually believed, they'd be like, oh my god, they've been lying to us for, like, hundreds of years.
Oh, for sure. But it's still, I would still argue that their goals on Dune were important.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you mind if... Okay, I'm just going to end this with like a 4-minute ramble for me, if that's okay with everybody.
Go for it.
About the fantasy stuff in general. So, I think the Bene Gesserit would not have said that the Fremen's beliefs were core to what they actually thought was going to happen. They were telling the Fremen that stuff to enable a Kwisatz Haderach to have control, and then Bene Gesserit stuff would happen. That's not what happened. Yes. What happened was
I agree with that. That's what prophecy, I was trying to say.
Yeah, the Fremen prophecy, though, this made up bullshit artificial one that they have implanted onto them for convenience's sake, that's the real one. That's what actually happens. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole feeling throughout the whole book for every character. Leto is the first one who notices it, that Arrakis changes people. And then when Jessica and Paul get stuck there, and we should have talked about this in the first part, they change dramatically because of Arrakis. Like, Arrakis and Dune as a whole eats you. It spits you back out. It changes you. And the reason that I say it's a mixture of fantasy and sci-fi is going on a journey and changing because of something. To me, that feels like a more fantasy-oriented plotline, but it's sci-fi-oriented because the spice changes you.
I don't there's think a you can call change reason a fantasy plot element. That's just a character development archetype.
Okay, but say it's this priestess woman and her son, who's a chosen one on the planet, with these people who have mystical spiritual beliefs about these giant animals that are basically their gods. Like, it's the whole thing together that's fantasy.
Well, to me, that doesn't read as fantasy because that's a thing that cultures can have. Like, I think it's world building of a realistic culture or a realistic speculative world.
There are many cultures, I believe, if I remember correctly, that did use animals as gods.
I don't agree, Matt, but I don't think you're wrong. I think it's very much an opinionated thing, and you can't be wrong about your opinion.
It's the chosen one plot line with them. That's, I feel like saying that's not fantasy to have a chosen one plot line that takes command over the sci-fi plot line. That's a little bit, that's why I think there's fantasy elements to it.
Well, I can see, I would say that there are fantasy elements. I just don't think that they're necessarily like entirely fantastical elements, because part of the point of fantasy and sci-fi in general is to co-opt themes that we see in real life. So while I can say The Chosen One is definitely a fantastical element because it assumes, like, you know, that there's going to be some outside external magical forces like destiny or fate or whatever making these things happen, that can be a fantastical element, but I don't think necessarily like using the mythology of the people who live on a given planet to justify making that fantasy.
It's the whole thing. It's the whole thing. That's what the point I'm trying to get across here for you. You know, it's fine if you don't see it at all. That's fine.
Yeah.
For me, there's a lot of fantasy in it.
I respect that.
Not as much sci-fi.
I respect it. I just can't see that, like, you know, making up a whole group of people to populate this alien planet and having them have mythology. I can't see that as a fantastical element.
It turns out to be like controlling things a lot more than I thought it would. Like Paul and his terrible purpose, it completely subverts the whole Bene Gesserit way, and there's no way anybody can.
I'm not certain.
To me, that's like,
that's fantastical, though, because a lot of that goes with like the Bene Gesserit wanted to control these people, but they weren't.
It's fine if I am not making any sense to you, but I don't want to go in circles around.
No, you're making sense to me.
Yeah,
no, you're good.
I think that you're spitting. I do think that there's like at least like a teaspoon of fantasy in the story, whether that be, you know, the Chosen One or stuff. Like I feel like the Messiah itself is enough to be like, this isn't fantasy, this is more so world building stuff. But to me, like the things that I see as fantastical are more so like just things that aren't real or like aren't realistic. Like that, I mean, that's sort of mine.
Is quintessential like fantasy magic.
I would say that stuff like The Voice and like the prescience is certainly something.
Like that's quintessentially a fantastical element with no science fiction.
Yeah, for sure.
Possible bearing.
Yeah. I think
those elements being so dominant are what changed my mind.
Mm-hmm. I think so before we get too caught up on this anymore, because I agree with you. I think there are absolutely fantastical elements. I wouldn't say it pushes it as far to say it's a sci-fi fantasy, but I do agree with you. I think a lot of media tends to have fantastical elements, but doesn't always make it a fantasy. So in the same way as other media, I believe the same way with Dune. Like, for example, I wouldn't say like Full Metal Alchemist is a fantasy series, even though it has alchemy, because it's significantly more of a like political thriller than it would be strictly fantasy. You know what I mean? See, like it has fantasy, but it isn't fantasy.
That's where I would disagree with you, but that is not the topic of this video.
I think we should stay away from metaphors on this topic, because we're going to dig way deeper.
I agree. I think we should move on to the next question. Bene Gesserit being good or bad. Now, I laughed really hard when you asked this question.
The Shadow Organization is not good.
The Bene Gesserit are good guys, then I think you're just dumb.
All right, so as the resident Brian Herbert hater for the audience in the afterword in the Dune novel, Brian Herbert describes the Bene Gesserit as heroic, and while I will give him this, throughout the Dune books, there's six of them and only six of them, there are characters in the Bene Gesserit who do break away from their ways and are protagonists and are heroes, if you will, throughout this series. But call the organization itself heroic is laughable.
I don't think the Shadow Organization that spreads propaganda to a bunch of the native people of a fictional planet commits eugenics and also is more than willing to like kill if they deem you as an animal. Like I don't think the Bene Gesserit are good people.
They intentionally cut the Emperor's bloodline off by making him have a daughter, so he can't have a male heir to continue the name. I wish this was in the movie, but they explain, you know, the reason why Lady Jessica doesn't know her father is so that they can commit incest. If they need like a specific like recessive trait to like move down, like if they really need like to distill like a certain trait, that they can like make you commit incest. You know, it's perfect eugenics that they're doing to birth their messiah. And then obviously what they do where they seed primitive you know, in air quotes, cultures with their ideas and their prophecies, so any Bene Gesserit can land on a planet and immediately assume like a position of a spiritual leader, is fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's super fucked up. I think at the absolute best, you can describe them as morally fairly dark. Uh-huh. That's the best it gets.
Yeah.
And at its worst, they're plotting to completely concoct a dictatorship over the entire galaxy with a super antichrist called the Kwisatz Haderach.
You could perhaps argue that had they had their way, and Paul was a woman and he married Fade, and they had a bunch of like emperors, that considerably less people would have died compared to Paul's jihad. But the galaxy would still not be in a good place if Fade and his Atreides' wife are ruling over it, and the Harkonnens are still a major force in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
All right, I have a question for you guys.
Okay. Yes.
So I have to leave.
Okay.
So I think, would you guys like to talk about the Chaney movie versus book and more changes from the movie to the book in another episode?
We don't have to talk about that if we don't want to.
I think we should. I think if we want to, we could do it in another episode. What are you guys' thoughts?
I'm okay with that. I'm very vocal that I like all the changes in the movie. There are some that I'm like a little iffy on, but
I like most of them. Yeah,
it's hard for me to be like Chani was better in the book when movie Chani had actual personality and a character and was like had an interesting story plot point to her. So yeah, I'm willing to talk about it more in the future.
Yeah,
but I enjoy talking about Dune. I enjoy the concepts of Dune. I like Dune the movie. I'm excited to hopefully see Dune Messiah. Will Messiah's I slave myself so through Dune Messiah the book?
It's I way guess. Shorter. It's way yeah, shorter. If that makes so you feel any better.
But do I really want to go through Dune again?
I'll let you know.
I did not like the book.
Pretty different from the
first. It is very different from Dune. Okay. I think you'll like it. It's shorter, so it has more option, like more time to be tightly written.
Okay.
So I'll let you know if I think it's that much tighter and if I think you'd like it. Because I'm reading it right now. Because,
I mean, I would assume that Frank improves as they go along. I mean, most people consider God Emperor to be like the peak. So I would assume that his writing gets a bit more tighter as things go on.
I'm excited to read God Emperor.
All right, well, I think that's all for us on Dune. Go see Dune Part 2 if it's still in theaters when this episode comes out. Should otherwise be.
Especially know. in a large format like IMAX and Dolby, because my Dolby experience fucking rocked.
My IMAX experience fucking rocked, dude. I sat in the back row and my entire body was being shaken by the speakers.
I saw it in a normal ass theater because I had a bucket for popcorn that had refills for only $2.50. So my entire trip. No, my entire trip to the movie costed me only $15.
Nice.
And Joe Biden's America, going to the movies for $15 is considered cheap. Yeah. Can you believe this?
Yeah, that was with a large drink. My bucket's the size of a large popcorn, and I got a movie ticket at a not matinee time. So,
All right. Well, was it matinee? Let's call it I don't here.
Know. All right.
We love you. Cheers, from Arrakis.
Cheers from Arrakis.
My Arrakis.
My desert.
Dune.